This is Authors in Focus.
Hi, I'm James Reed, a fantasy author publishing under JMD Reed. Mask of Guilt, Mask of Illumination Book 1 is out. We all wear masks, some of us to hide our guilt. Lady Fenari, lost in the malaise of depression, finds purpose with a group of all-women thieves, the Crack Gems. Intrigue, romance, betrayal, and adventure swirls around her in this epic fantasy tale. Today, I'm joined by Adam Gaffin. He's the author of the sci-fi novel A Quiet Revolution, The Cassidy Chronicles, Volume 4.
How are you doing today, Adam?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Oh, doing just fine. I have a getting over a bit of a cold. I wasn't sure if I'd be able to do the podcast, but it seemed to have broken last night, so that's good.
That's always good to hear.
Yeah. So I always like to start these podcasts out with a fun question or two. So, Adam, are you a coffee person or a tea person?
Either one, as long as they're cold.
Interesting. All right.
It's a little different. I grew up in New England, so you would expect, you know, okay, hot coffee or hot tea. No, I will drink iced coffee or iced tea year-round.
All right, so you don't need the extra warmth against those northeastern listeners, then?
Nope.
They sound particularly horrific sometimes.
Oh, they are. They are. Where we used to live in Maine, it would snow in October, and then the last of the piles of snow would melt probably by Memorial Day.
Yeah. No, I have a friend that lives up in Saskatchewan, and she's like posting pictures of like snow and, you know, like a foot of snow in April. And I'm just like, why? Oh, I couldn't live there. But all right. So you like iced tea in the middle of winter. Very fascinating. So, Adam, how long have you wanted to be an author?
Oh, I've wanted to write since I was in high school, but I've only gotten really serious about it since there was a brief period around 2010, plus or minus a couple of years, where I was working on it. But I have really had the opportunity since early last year, so early 2020.
Okay. Well, that's awesome. So let's talk about your, I think it's your new release, A Quiet Revolution, which
yes.
I think is the fourth in the sort of Cass and Ken sort of little series going on. Is that correct?
That's right. It's the fourth volume of the Cassidy Chronicles.
Yeah. So why don't you tell us a bit about Cass and Ken and what their newest adventure is all about?
Sure. Well, Cass and Ken, Ayanna Cassidy and Kendra, originally Foster Briggs, now Cassidy. They're a married couple. It's set 100 years from now, plus or minus. And the A Quiet Revolution is, let's see. Well, they've been, since the second book in the series, which is The Road to the Stars, they've been having problems with what I'm calling the Artemis Colony. Like I said, it's 100 years from now, and mankind has finally started moving out from the Earth, and there are colonies on the moon, there are colonies in the asteroids, there's a colony on Mars, and there's a colony on Titan. And they've all broken away and formed an independent nation called the Solarian Union. So along come Cass and Ken, and it's 2118, and Kendra is in charge by right of ownership, inheritance. She's in charge of what's going to be the world's first starship, the first faster-than-light capable ship. And, you know, she's excited about this, so she gets on and she makes this big announcement that this is what's going to happen. And the Artemis Colony objects because they are the 800-pound gorilla, and they don't want anybody else butting in on, you know, their sovereignty. They don't want anybody else butting in on their power. So the Road to the Stars and the Measure of Humanity are concerned with the conflict that is building between the Artemis colony and the Solarian Union and Kendra and her Terran Federation. And in A Quiet Revolution, things are getting even dirtier. On the moon, in the Artemis colony, there are separatist movements. There are revolutionaries, and the government there is doing their very best to try to suppress them and put them down. And so Kendra decides that, well, you know, if we can't, we don't really want to kill everybody. We don't want to do all this, but we can certainly encourage the revolutionaries and help them and maybe have a friendlier government and end the conflict that way. So that Quiet Revolution is a lot of the behind the scenes, you know, what's going on the moon as they're trying to move that project forward, in addition to all the other things that they are doing.
Okay. So I saw on Amazon that you're in the sort of hard sci-fi category. Is that accurate? Or, I mean, did Amazon just throw you in a random category? Sometimes they do that.
So I try to have my science as accurate as I can make it. It's all, you know, there's an awful lot of extrapolation.
Obviously.
An awful lot of what ifs. But, you know, if this, then that, if that, then something else. And so, you know, a chain of plausibility. When I refer to stuff that, for example, the starships, and at this point in the fourth book, there are now two starships and two more being built. The starships are all coated with, let's see, passivated chromium seaborgium, which is actually a real thing. You can take chromium and the element seaborgium, and you can combine them in a metallic crystalline form, and it's 90% reflective to everything, in addition to being incredibly dense. So it makes perfect sense to have that as the outer plating on a hull.
Okay. The seaborgium, one of those ones you need a particle accelerator to make?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, it is. But the odd thing about it is that in its natural state, it breaks down very quickly, as most of those things do. But if you manage to combine it, chromium is one of the ones that you can combine it with, it stabilizes.
Nice. Okay. I didn't know that. Well, yeah, I knew that the bigger they get, like they get more unstable, but I read somewhere that like there's a theoretical point like where it starts to get stable again at the really high ends, if they could ever, you know, make that sort of material. Like I don't understand the laws of, you know, particle physics enough, but that's what I heard once from a physicist, that you get out farther than we have, that you can start to get stable elements again.
So. I've heard that too. I decided not to play in that particular sandbox.
Okay.
You know, because we are only set 100 years from now, so
yeah,
they're just on the cusp of some revolutionary changes. The faster than light.
Yeah. So
I have a lot of quantum, a lot of stuff with quantum mechanics, but
yeah. So how does your faster than light work? Is that like the Ossebar drive or?
So So I'm referring to it as a warp drive. There aren't too many ways of referring to kind of classes of faster than light drives, but the way it works is a field is generated, which removes the enclosed object from this universe. It isolates it from this universe and therefore makes it exempt from this universe's laws.
Okay.
And the whole field went through three different iterations. The first one was just a spherical field, and spheres don't move. You can't go anywhere because all the pressure on all the sides is equal. So the second iteration, they had figured out how to shape the field. And by shaping the field, you're reducing the pressure on one side, kind of like an airplane's wing. You reduce the pressure on the top, increase the pressure on the bottom, and the increased pressure lifts the wing, simplifying it hugely.
I gotcha.
So the third iteration, which is what they're on, what's making it all practical, allows for a much finer tuning of the shape of the bubble. So not only can you go forward, you know, forward, but by changing the bubble's width and dimensions laterally, you can change direction as well. So now it's a practical.
Okay. It reminds me. There's a Japanese series called Crest of the Stars, where they kind of use something like that, where like they surround their ships in bubbles of. I don't remember the thing, but I do remember they kind of did that thing, and then they got into like the space battle where like you couldn't interact with anyone who's in one of these things, but if you could get your bubble to merge with their bubble, then you could like have space battles while going faster than light. So. But you're moving at like relative speed to each other, right? So it was kind of like a really interesting concept.
You know, I actually thought about that, you know, because a lot of the movies and pop and television shows show battles going on at warp speed. And it's like, okay, unless we really want to get into some exotic and completely out there weaponry, lasers are a light speed weapon. So if you fire a laser at warp speed, you're going to hit something that's suddenly, you know, millions of kilometers behind you, maybe. So the thing about the field is, again, it's removing you from this universe. You're slightly out of phase with the universe. So you can't interact with something outside of the field. So there's no there's no warp speed battles going on. And in my universe, if you have two warp fields interact, it tends to melt down the warp drive. Essentially, it overloads it. It short circuits it. And so that's a very bad thing to happen.
It does sound like that. So this is the fourth volume of your story, right? Of your series?
Correct.
Yes. What's it like writing the fourth volume of a series versus like the first volume? Is there anything you noticed that was kind of different about the writing process or how it felt or anything like that?
Well, all right. So the first volume has its own interesting story because I started writing that in 2012 and I had this idea. I actually had the first chapter of the very first one, and it was just this scene. And I wrote this scene out, and it was at their wedding, and the minister pulls out a gun and tries to kill Cass. And so she grabs Kendra's hand, and it's a plural wedding, it's a triad. She grabs her hand and their fiancé, Derek's hand, and they take off running from the wedding. All right? And I just had this scene. I didn't really particularly have any names. And then I had to figure out, you know, having written this scene out, I was like, okay, there's got to be a story behind it. So I start writing the story. And I had this idea. I was going to write four novellas, about 25,000 words each. And it was going to tell the whole story. It was just going to be this nice, you know, 100,000 words and done. So I write the first one. And it's called Run Like Hell. And, you know, pretty straightforward story. I write the second one called A Deadly Quest. Again, pretty straightforward story. There, you know, it's science fiction, yes, because it's 100 years from now and there's, you know, various technological things that come into play. But it's more of an adventure than a space opera. So I start writing the third one and I get about 10,000 words into it. And then it's early 2013, and life happens. And I put the book down for a while. Over the next 7 years or so, I pick it up on and off, and I just can't seem to get anywhere because I wasn't sure where I was going with it. And it wasn't until last year that I finally figured out who was actually behind all of it and how it all fit together. And so I start, you know, I was like, okay, so I write, and I discover that instead of writing a 25,000 word novella, I've written about a 50,000 word just about novel. And unfortunately, there wasn't a good splitting point, so I couldn't stick with my original plan, which was 4 novellas. And I'm like, okay, and it doesn't make any sense for me to put this out there on its own because it's twice the size of the other two. So I put them all together into one volume and called that, and just called it the Cassidy Chronicles. There's no volume one, it's just the Cassidy Chronicles. And it was a complete story. It told, you know, it had a start, a middle, and an end. I was very pleased with it. I was happy. It was like, okay, I told the story. And then I started to write the next book. And I had an idea, had a concept. So I started writing it down. And I got about 5,000 words into it and realized it's just not working. I had a story, but I didn't have a world that it fit in. So I'm sitting there and I'm thinking and I'm trying to figure out, well, what do I do? Because I like the concept. I didn't want to abandon the concept. And then it occurred to me, well, if I drop this into the Cassidy universe, let's see what happens. Let's bring those characters in. And lo and behold, it worked.
Yeah, I get that.
The first book was not intended to be part of a series. The fourth book very much is part of a series. It's part of a very definite story arc, which started in that second one. And I'm just about finished writing the fifth one. This particular story arc is going to end in the fifth one. So I know now where it's going. And so not only is there a beginning, middle, and end to the, you know, to volume four, but it all has to move the arc forward. So, it's the beginning of the end of the story arc as well.
All right. Yeah, I can see that. So I think, I wrote a short story that turned into 13 novels so far. So I get that.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it's like, well, and I mean, those novels were like made up of story ideas that I just never found a place for. And then this short story just kind of provided a good platform to tell various story ideas. And it worked out.
Yeah. Well, I've said that in other places. I mean, okay, as an author, it's my book, it's your book. You know, when we're writing it, it is our book, okay? But it is our characters' stories. So if their story isn't done being told, then as an author, you're not done. Until that character says to you, that's it, you know, it's all over. You know, I've told you everything that there is to tell. There's still more to do. And yeah, you know, short story to the 13 book series. There you go. You know, that those characters very obviously have a lot to tell you. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, in fairness, there's like 2 characters that came out of that short story. They each got their own series. And then another character got like a spinoff from the series. So, you know, it's like, but it just all sprung out from that short story. And wondering kind of what happened to the surviving characters after it was over. And that question just lingered in my mind, like what happened to them. And so I just kept thinking about it. And like, I had an idea, like even when I wrote it, what happened to them, but I wanted to tell it. So yeah, now it's all being published and some people like it. So yeah, that's about all you can hope for, right? That some people will like it. and get something out of it. So what are you working on next now that you have a, so you're working on book five next, anything else in the works?
Let's see. So yeah, book five, I have a side project. Amazon is coming out with this new thing called Bella.
Yeah.
Launching sometime this summer. It's kind of a serialized story, and readers will be able to sample three episodes, you know, think of them as short stories, and then they can start purchasing more stories. And the author, from the author's point of view, our job is to tell a continuing story. Hopefully one that's going to leave with cliffhangers and the reader saying, okay, what comes next at the end of each installment? So I'm working on one of those. It is set in the Cassidy universe. One of the background details is that Ayana and Kendra, they were neighbors. They grew up together. They're like 3 weeks difference in age. So they've known each other literally all their lives. And so this side project, I thought it would be neat for Kendra to tell some stories of growing up, her childhood growing up with Ayana. And so it's called Memories of Ayana. And it's a lot of fun to write because right now, Kendra and Ayana are 6 years old, and they're it's interesting writing them as 6 year olds, what they were like at that age. Forgive me, my cat has decided that he really wants to be part of this interview, so he's trying to.
Yeah, that's fine. That sounds like great. I hope it goes well with Kindavella.
Yeah. So that'll launch whenever Amazon launches it. Who knows when that's going to be? Supposed to be June, I heard, but
they keep sending me emails like, "Yeah, you want to get your books out on there?" And I'm like, "Okay, but when's it launching?" No idea. Yeah. So we'll see. So where can our listeners connect with you on the internet?
Well, a great launching place to go is CassidyChronicles.com because there are blog posts up there every day. Every Monday, I have author interviews with other authors. I think you were actually one of the first ones to appear.
Yeah, I think so.
So that's every Monday. Tuesday through Friday, readers can get a sample of each of the first four volumes, along with audio. Three of the books are available in audio, and the fourth one's being recorded. I also have a couple other authors who do guest posts. They're putting up their work. So that's all at CassidyChronicles.com, and there are also freebies there. There's a whole page of nothing but free books and music and other goodies.
All right.
I'm also on Instagram and Facebook as Adam Gaffin, and they can also drop an email to me at adamgaffinauthor@gmail.com.
Well, that sounds great. It's really nice chatting with you, Adam.
It's been great being here. I've really enjoyed it.
Yeah, you have yourself a good one.
Thank you. You do the same.
This has been Authors in Focus. You can find my fantasy novels on Amazon. Follow news of my writing at my blog, jmd-read.com, and follow me on Twitter at jmdread. You can also join my reader group on Facebook, Fantastical Worlds of the Imagination. You can find more episodes of the podcast at fantasy-focus.com and wherever your favorite podcast is hosted.